I was born Ruth Elsie Banke in Greene County, Wisconsin, which is near Madison, Wisconsin. And in, you want to know the year?
Sure.
Okay, I was born on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, 1917.
And you lived in, how long did you live in Wisconsin?
I lived in Wisconsin 20 years. And then I taught school in Dodgeville, Wisconsin 1 year. And then I was married the next year, which was 1940. And then we moved to Austin, Minnesota, where we opened a women's specialty shoe department. And we did that for 4 years. Then we opened a women's fancy ready-to-wear, or a special, now you call it boutique shop, but we called it a ladies' ready-to-wear. Mm-hmm. And we did that for 38 years. And I usually did the style shows and did all the window trims. Then my husband sold the business, and but all this time I always quilted behind scenes. I was always considered, what should I say, a bit odd, because I was the only one who did this. So it got so that after the first 4 years of my marriage, I no longer admitted I quilted. I just quilted behind the scenes and in the evenings and when no one else was around. But all of our quilts on our beds, everyone has been made by me. Mm-hmm. And the children got so that when they went to what you call a bunking party, I guess, they did not have homemade quilts. So when the children came to visit our house, the kids would call about 3 o'clock and say, "Mom, do you mind putting a bedspread on our bed so that they don't think we're that poor, because we have all those homemade quilts?" And I said no. So I always had nice bedspreads to put on the beds if and when we had company. And then during some of the years of my husband's retirement in Minnesota, I went back to teaching school again. But instead of teaching home ec as I had started out, I made the remark where my children were going to school that I could do a better art job of teaching than what had ever come out of the school. And the nun said to me, "Fine, you have a job." And I said, "Wait a minute, I don't have an art degree." She said, "Well, we'll take you anyway." So I promised her and the school board that I would go to night school every night that I could, and I would build up credits so that I would have at least a minor in art. And that's what I did for 4 years until finally there were enough teachers available. So I just quit because I really wasn't needed. At the time, I guess I was needed, maybe. Maybe that's the way to put it. So then my husband went back into business, and he went into the real estate business. So of course, now and then, when someone was missing in the office, I helped out. Wasn't the most efficient in office work, but at least I was a body sitting there. And one day I got a call from the librarian saying that they had a speaker at the Y who had become ill and couldn't do her speech, and would I pick her speech up and do it for her? And I asked what it was about. And she said it was about quilting. And I said, "I don't know anything about quilting to do a speech." And she said, "Well, I know better." And I said, "No, I can do some quilting, but I don't feel adequate to take her place." She said, "Never mind, we need a speaker. I'll bring you 10, 15 books. But in 2 weeks, I expect you to take her place." So in the 2 weeks, I read several of the books and decided that was a waste of time. But in the meantime, while I was reading or doing something else, I finished a quilt that I had been working on for 6 years and finished it so that I could have it for that speech, which now my oldest son has, and it's supposedly classified as an heirloom. And anyway, I did the speech, and from then on, my world changed. The college wanted to use some of my work for their college, expose that they were going to have. And so I showed a great many of my quilts, and they said it was one of the largest attendance that they'd had since the college opened. So I was really elated. Then when school opened in the fall, the vocational division of the college asked me if I wouldn't teach. And I said, oh my, I'd be happy to. And so I started out with 25 in the class, which is a bit much for vocational, especially in, you know, in sewing. And I really hadn't pioneered ever teaching quilting so that, you know, I felt full-fledged to as to what might happen in a classroom. I would know with children, but I wouldn't know with adults. So it was a whole different world. But it was a different world because it was very interesting. They sat there like blotters, and of course, we didn't have a discipline problem. And everyone who had not quilted just seemed to come out of the woodwork. And for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, the class was always filled all the blessed time. And then I started one at a Y and one at a, I don't know what it's called. It was like a health club, and I did it there. And then we had been taking vacations in Florida, and my husband said, let's go for the winter. So that kind of stopped my classes for a while. And then we decided, I guess, we would come here. So I had to leave all my classes behind. And when I came here, the first place I called, I think, was middle school. And they said, no, they didn't need a teacher. So I was a bit devastated over that. But I went to the beauty shop and the next week and having my hair fixed, and there was a woman walked up to me and she said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm finishing off all my class samples that I had. I understand in Boca you don't need a teacher. So I said, I'm just going to make up all my samples for Christmas presents. The box is a junk and why not get rid of it? And she said, would you teach me? And I said, no, I don't like a one-to-one basis. She said, well, how many would you like? I said, well, no less than 15. She said, you're kidding. And I said, no. And then I reminded her of the price I wanted. She said, that's no problem. I'll get 15 girls. Then I retorted back once more, but I don't want to start till January because it was near Thanksgiving. And I said, well, I really don't want to start till January. So she said, fine. Whatever the first Monday is after New Year's, we'll come. So the first lesson was in my home, here, at this house. Mm-hmm. Okay, what else do you want to know?
I'd like to know how you learned how to quilt.
Okay, my mother had always lived in the city of Madison, which was a large city, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And my father wanted to make her happy by living in the city, but he had always run machinery and he couldn't stand it, so he went back to the farm. And so I was born on a farm. My mother didn't like that, and she did not want to see me as a farm girl. So every chance she got, she sent me to my grandmother's, which was only half a mile away, and my grandmother sewed beautifully. And she made quilts, and the one that you have your speaker on is my grandmother's, which I'm assuming by now is probably 110 years old. And then I had an aunt who lived in Rockford, Illinois, and every summer I was sent there. I made one quilt and one dress each summer. So she taught me. And I dearly loved it. And my mother did fancy work, so between, and she herself had a great art flair, even though her education was not the best. She had a tremendous art flair, which I'm assuming passed on to me. So when I went to high school, I, of course, enrolled in home ec in every art class I could get into. Loved it. Dearly loved it. Then when I went to college, I had a boyfriend who insisted I go to college, and most girls those days did not go to college. You either were a secretary or you worked for somebody until you got married. And my mother couldn't see that either, and neither could this friend of mine. So he just at me. You have the money to go to college, go. So I decided to go to home ec school, which was Stevens Point, Wisconsin. At that particular time, Stevens Point, Winona, and Iowa State in that vicinity were the three top ones. So I went to Stevens Point all 4 years. And during one semester, we only had one professor who even professed to know a great deal about quilting, but we put two on and we did it, and she realized that I had done it before, so she left me with the class to finish the work. Well, then I was kind of forgotten because I taught school, and then I was married in 1940, and to make this shoe department work, I had to work, except recreation after 8:30 for me was to drag out this quilt, which my daughter has, and that took me 7 years to get it done because I could only do it when no one was around or I wasn't working. But finally I got that together, and then the two little boys were 6 and 7, and they, I don't know why, but they said, "Mom, we want a quilt." So I took them to the store, and those days the thing to do was to buy a kit. And so I bought the most expensive kit, which was a Bucilla kit for quilting. And all the pieces and the designs and everything were all included in there. So that meant I could still take that thing to work at noon and I could work on it because I didn't have to really, you know, have all these pieces cut out. So I did that, and that one went to my son. And it's a sweet pea pattern that I'm assuming has about 2,000 small pieces on it.
What kind of pattern?
And it's called the Sweet Pea Vine. Uh-huh. And Bruce in Coral Springs now has it. And I did show it at the Guild show. Mm-hmm. Very seldom. He tells me, I give it to him, and then I keep taking it back if there's a show here. But his is the only one of the three heirlooms that I can show because the rest are in Minnesota, see? Because my daughter has one and my son has one, and they're all in Minneapolis or St. Paul. Mm-hmm. Well, then the shop, you quilted shop, found out about me, and she wanted me to work for her. But she only wanted to use two or three students, and I was not about to work for a salary that wasn't even worth getting, you know, in the car and getting dressed up. And so I said, no, I wouldn't teach unless I had 6 or 7 students. It wasn't worth it. But finally, one day, she got 7 students, so she hired me. Well, then in the meantime, the Mormon church heard that I was teaching. So they called me and said, would you teach? And I said, oh, sure, I'd be happy to. And then I told them the price, and they said, oh, we can't afford you either. I said, well, that's fine. There must be others then. So it happened to be, I think they're called elders, the elder's wife who'd called me. And so she called me back in a half hour, and she said, we'll hire you. What we'll do is charge our sisters a certain fee, and the church picks up the remainder. But as it was, the class went to 22, and my salary was already taken care of by the minimum fee that they had. So I taught there for 4 years. Loved it. Then when the Barrington opened, I don't know if you know about it, it's closed now, but it was in Del Rey. And I think it was several businessmen who put this together, and they had many, many old pieces of art, rugs, quilts, paintings, pottery, and they would have a guest speaker once a week. And someone heard about me and asked if I wouldn't give the history of quilting. I do give two speeches. I give one on the history of quilting from the very beginning until now. And so I was hired at least twice a year at the Barrington. And that was really lots of fun. Yeah. And then there were various quilt shows that were put on, one in Pompano, and I went there, and that was Diane Marvin's show. Now, she's another girl who knows a lot about history, and I have her name and address. And she gives history of quilting plus the care of quilting, a little bit, a completely different type of speech than I give. Mm-hmm. And the other one I give is, what will you find, or what will I find, Ruth, in my grandmother's trunk? And I have given that a couple times, and I'm going to give it in Coral Springs in 3 weeks. But in the meantime, I guess I just took a chance, and I called J.C. Mitchell and said, would you like a quilting teacher? And he said, well, no, they never have a following. And he said, I don't have the time to promote it. I said, what? J.C. Mitchell Elementary School, but they have evening classes. So I said, well, I think I have 10 who are interested, and I can't do it in my home anymore because Camino Gardens really doesn't allow anyone to conduct any business in their home. So after my two meetings in my home, I had to cease that. So I started teaching at J.C. Mitchell, and a couple of months later, a friend said, Logger's Run is opening. Why don't you go out and interview? So I called, and it was the same man who had interviewed me at middle school. And he said, Ruth? I said, yes. He said, I had forgotten your name, but please come out. So I went out and did the interview, and he hired me. So I've been at J.C. Mitchell, Logger's Run, and at a quilt shop then the last 2 years. Been busy. So I've been busy. Well, I guess I would have to start that I started on a sewing machine because I was mechanically minded. And somewhere within me, I like to go faster than actual handwork. But I know that handwork is the prettiest in it. And the results were so much better that I made myself do it. But there's still, you know, two pieces of me. That one wants to go one way and one wants to go another. And I dearly love the sewing machine, although I do not do that as well as I would like to. To me, it passes, and the average person doesn't know. But it does not suit me as well as handwork does. What was the other part of the question?
The development of your stitching, like the first stitches you learned, how you learned them.
Okay, I guess I made an apron, and because my mother didn't know how to put on bias tape, I put one side on by machine, and then she was going to show me how to put the other on by hand. And knowing that she didn't know how to sew, there was a bit of an argument. So I quickly ran to my grandmother, and it was right when Mom was teaching because she had this inner sense. But of course, Smarty Britches here was not going to do it that way until I, went to the top. And I think putting bias tape on a slip was probably the first. Then the next thing, my mother always did fancy work. And she was not satisfied unless it was done well. And so we did lots of fancy work, lots of tablecloths, so many dish towels you wouldn't believe. And what's the other thing? Oh, pillowcases. Oh, you were an absolute outcast if you didn't have at least a couple of dish towels and pillowcases that you had done. So I did all of that. Then I joined 4-H, and then you had to have a rounded a repertoire of things, a machine piece, a handwork piece, machine attachments, finishings all by hand. So that forced me to do it. Then when I went to my grandmother's the first couple times, she'd have these big frames up like this. And at first it wasn't that interesting, but you see, they covered a whole living room. So a couple of kids would come. And so my mother, to keep us good, would pin sheets on the edges of this and make a house. And then we would sit underneath. Well, and if someone would leave, somehow I always wanted to take a stitch or two. Whether or not it was left in, now I don't know. But anyway, I'd keep trying it. And they'd put me on a stool, and I'd keep trying it and trying it and trying it. Well, then my mother decided to do the Dresden plate. Oh, and I thought, that poor lady, she'll never get it done. But anyway, she cut them out, and she pieced them. I think my dad finished them.
What is the Dresden plate?
The Dresden plate is a circle, and it's just like a plate. It has a center, and then it has 16 pieces. And then you sew 16 pieces back, and it looks just like a plate when it's finished. And she became ill, and that frame sat in that living room all winter. And my dad said, you and I have got to get this thing out of here by spring. So he and I would quilt and quilt and quilt to get rid of it. And my son Bruce has it, the one that my dad and I finished. Well, then, of course, when I went to my aunt's, I had to do a quilt every summer. And she was very good at it. And she just wouldn't leave it unless it was suited her standards. Well, then I don't know, I took home ec in high school, and somehow quilting was put aside for a while. Then when I was in college, I did a piece of cutwork tablecloth. And that was on pure linen with pure silk thread. It was absolutely devastating to do. It's service for six. My grandmother thought I was doing such a good job. The dear lady bought me 13 napkins. I could have died, and I could have stabbed her with a knife greatly, because it meant another 4 years to get this done, because your eyes can't stand it. The work is so close. So I made up my mind I was never going to do cut work again. And so back came the quilting.
Yeah. Well, exactly what is cut work?
Cut work is a tablecloth, and you do like a buttonhole stitch, and then you cut out the hole, and it has to rely on your stitches to hold the work forever. I'll show you a piece after the interview. And well, then when I was married, we needed quilts, so if I didn't have time, I tied them. Then if I had the time, I would quilt them, and then you can take the ties out. Sometimes they were finished, sometimes they weren't, you know. And then one time we had a county fair, and they needed a judge. And I think I judged foods. And on the other division was clothing and with quilting. So the next year I entered a quilt, and I won first prize. And so I thought, oh, this is kind of neat. I'll do it next year. So I finished one of the others, but when they came in, I still was judging foods, and that one lady said, that's Ruth Rills, and she had one last year, and she couldn't possibly do one each year, so get out of this. Start me back again?
That was a story about that.
Okay, I entered the one quilt, and I won first prize. Mm-hmm. The next year, I brought another one. And the lady said, no one could finish one each year, just put that one aside. So I don't know, I just never entered again. I knew in my own mind it was good, so that I didn't need an ego builder, so I just left it. Mm-hmm. That's that.
What were the first patterns that you learned?
Okay, the very first pattern I ever did was the sailboat. And it's a little tiny, it's a nine patch, and just triangles and squares, and the four little triangles were the sails. And that, as I remember, was in blue and white. Then the next one I did was a nine patch, but in the center I wanted to draw a tree of life. And I was visiting at my aunt's, and my uncle thought that would be fantastic. And he loved art as well as I did. So between the two of us, we drew a great big tree of life in the middle of the quilt, and then had all the nine patches around the outside. I chose the color rust, which was very few people those days were choosing rust. And so I brought it home that fall to my mother, and she said, "The quilt is lovely, but why did you choose rust? That is such a horrible color." But in my mind, I thought it was beautiful. Let's see, then the next quilt I did was just every other square was blue and white, and I did it for my college bid. In the meantime, I helped my mother and grandmother quilt, but I didn't do any quilts to my own credit that I could say that was finished and done by myself. But the blue and white one was done for a bedspread for college. Mm-hmm. And then I really started on this paragon for my daughter, which was the kit that I'm telling you, told you about, okay? Well, let's see. I don't know. I suppose the next one was teaching then, which makes a lot of years of, you know, a big span in between there. I always worked on something, but I guess I can't even remember what they were. Oh, I know. When I was 11, I guess that instigated it. Those days you were poor, and so I made a baby quilt out of feed sacks. It was out of blue and white. And I happen to have six transfers of six different animals, and so I embroidered them. I still have it to this day, and this also is in my speech for what you'll find in grandmother's trunk, and it's also in the history of quilting. Because if you were poor, you either chose a pattern or you chose the plain and you bleached it and then you dyed it. And my mother dyed every other block. And I did the animals in blue, and we entered it at the county fair, and I won first prize that time as a 11-year-old in 4-H. And then when I started teaching, I just made 50 million samples. Just I realized right then and there that I dearly love teaching, and that's where I belong. And now I have done several here while I'm in Boca that I guess could be called heirlooms. But I think my first love right at the moment is teaching. I love to see other people develop. Maybe I see colors performing in front of me that I don't have the time to do, but I can instigate them through my students. And it's so rewarding to see these students bloom and be happy. And I'm in my glory when I'm in the classroom. Just that's all there is to it. That much I know. The most important thing in my heart about quilting is somewhat different than other teachers. Mine is first color. Mm-hmm. You can create something and have it sewn just beautiful. And if the colors don't fit in your room anymore, forget it, you're never going to use it, because now you inwardly are all interior decorators. So if you're not choosing colors to go in your room, to go in your home, or something you like, you're either not going to finish it or you're not going to use it. And when someone comes in who does not know anything about quilting, if it's terrible color combination or something they don't like, they'll say, isn't that nice? Well, you know then it's a failure. But if someone comes in and their face lights up and they say, isn't that lovely? You know that first and foremost, it was color that hit them. The next, of course, is construction, and that means perfection. We're human beings and we don't have everything perfect, but we have to try as best to our ability to make it perfect. That means the patterns, the templates, the pattern that you pick, the material that you choose, and the materials must be compatible. You just can't use denim and knits. They have to be compatible. And for quilting, a good quilter never uses all those other fabrics. They are usually all cotton or cotton blends because they are conducive to lying flat. They're conducive to being constructed in the patterns that you're going to choose. So that's most important. Systems are important, but again, that is an absolute precision type of thing. And we are going into a new world, which your grandmother would probably flip over, is the Orpha cutter, which you can cut a pattern, the whole top, in one day with this Orpha cutter. It looks like a pizza cutter. But if you use good equipment, you do it slow enough so that you're accurate. It is accurate. It's almost perfect. You're almost like a machine. And so we are changing our world in the quilt world. We can do things a lot faster. This was cut in a class in probably 25 minutes. It was put together in another fast method, which probably only took me about 2 hours. Then, of course, you have to recut it, and it was probably cut in another 25 minutes. Then there's another process of putting the squares together, which probably only took me a half hour. The time, then, is quilting it. And on this one, I've gone berserk on it. I've done things that I don't do. It's not traditional. When I teach very traditional, but I think the other part of the world has to know that I do have something else in my head besides traditional, that I could do things that are, I don't know, kind of way out, the kids would say. So I just like to have people know that I can do them, and if they're in the class and that's what they like to do, I do have a head that can shift with it. But if I were to teach it to me, I taught, you know, mediocre painting in grade school. And you have to paint something well before you can throw paint on the wall. I just don't quite agree with that you can start that way. I think you have to learn basics before you can do anything else way out. That's my theory.
What, when you quilt by yourself outside of the class, you know, like talking outside of the classroom, you obviously apply those principles.
That's right.
How do you see, when you made quilts in Minnesota and in Wisconsin, they were being used for warmth and a lot, and really a very physically functional.
Okay, in Minnesota, we did not emphasize the small piecing that we do here in the average class, because extra loft is not conducive to quilt as fine. And it is has so much resilience that it just wants to puff right away, that small patterns would almost be lost in the puffing. So a 9-patch, say a 3-inch square, 4-inch square is much more conducive to extra loft. And now when I come down here, I brought some extra loft with me. Forget it, they're in the closet. They're so hot, we can't use them. And that's why when you first began down here, all you had was quilts that were either hung on a wall or they all wanted to make wall hangings, but most of them wanted to make pillows. And I'm death on pillows. I feel I don't teach anything when I teach a pillow top. And I guess I was one of the rebels who would not teach pillows. If they asked me, I just said no. I refuse to teach in a way that I don't believe in. And I just don't think, unless it would be children, little children, that adults learn anything by doing pillows and think they're going to learn how to do a quilt. The size, even on a wall hang, is devastating. If all you've ever done is, you know, 14 pillows, and if you think you can shift to the other, it just doesn't work. You just have too much to handle. Of course, I like a frame like this. I put even my doll quilts on frames. I put my miniatures on frames. But then I'm just stubborn on that score. I believe it. That's the way I do it.